get going with this morning session again. Now we have Emmanuel Diaconescu from Institute for Advanced Study in Princeton speaking on D-brains and categories.
Thank you. I'd like to start by thanking the organizers for this beautiful conference and for inviting me to speak here. And I'd like to give you some sort of a report on D-brains and categories, which is some research that's been done in the last year on an interaction between D-brain physics and some rather abstract area of mathematics. And the plan of the lecture is I'll start by some introduction and motivation briefly. Then I'll try to give you a crash course on categories for physicists, perhaps one transparency. even that's probably too much. Then I'll discuss at some length, D-brains in topological B-model, which is the only case I particularly understand sufficiently well. And then I'll try to describe some. In the last section, I'll discuss some how the topological brains are related to the physical brains that we are actually interested in N equals 2 superconformal field theories. So I guess there is no need for details here. One of the things we've learned in the last year is that one can have D-brain formation by condensation of open string fields. And there are two examples. The first one is well known and discussed many times, which is due to Sen, which is tachyon condensation in the PP bar system. And schematically, one has the tachyon field in the open string sector can have solitonic configurations, which are represented here, something like that. And by condensation of tachyon in such a system, in the presence of this configuration, we obtain a lower dimensional brain. Now, this was the starting point for the relation between Ramon-Ramon charges and K-theory, which was discovered by Witten. I mean, well, it was discovered by Minasian and Moore first, but this was the way Witten argued for this relation. And it should be said that this tachyon configuration is related to the Thea-Bott-Shapiro construction of the Thom class in K-theory. So one of the things I'd like to try to do today, or to try to advocate today, is that, well, it's more like a question, can we go beyond classifying charges? Because here, in fact, if you classify Ramon-Ramon charges, what really matters is that, is roughly speaking, the topological class of this configuration T, for example, its homotopy class at infinity, and the details of the map T are less important. So in this talk, I'd like to propose a framework in which we can try to go beyond classifying charges and obtain some sort of a classification of D-brains rather than charges. So that's the. Now, the concrete framework in which I'm planning to do this is D-brains in 2,2 superconformal field theories, which has been studied recently by many people. And I'd like to, first of all, to bring to your attention another situation in which we have D-brain formation as condensation of open string fields. Namely, if we consider D-brains as singularities, as studied by Douglas Moore, or at orbifold points, or maybe Gevner models, which are more complicated, typically such D-brains are described by, at low energies, this is low energy dynamics, are described by gauge theory, or so-called quiver gauge theory, which typically has a bunch of unitary group factors, and then matter multiplets in the bifundamental representation. So now, this work, Douglas, Hill, and Rommelsberger argued, I think, from my point of view, convincingly, that condensation of the matter multiplets in such a system can be interpreted somehow as different information of out of elementary constituents, which are called fractional brains. Now, the fractional brains are typically associated to each node of the quiver, and by condensating some excise, we sort of get new D-brains. But what's remarkable about this phenomenon is that this is a low-energy description. It's not a full string theory description, and it's quite remarkable that such a complicated process can be captured by a low-energy description. So this, of course, at this point, we can ask if there is any relation between this low-energy description and the Tachyon condensation in string field theory. That would be a very interesting thing to understand, and I think they are not at all unrelated, although I will not be able to provide a complete answer to this question. So I'll try to formulate roughly speaking, an abstract problem. To begin with, what we'd like to do is that given a closed ring background, we'd like to be able to classify all the possible D-brains compatible with that background. But perhaps that's too ambitious. So the thing I'm going to concentrate on is a smaller problem. Namely, I'll start with some known collection of D-brains, which can be thought of as, so for example, the fractional brains at some orbifold, or maybe, and then try to understand all the possible new D-brains that can be obtained for this given collection by condensation of open string fields. But the main idea of this approach is to concentrate. I mean, if the main idea is to look at all possible such composites at the same time. So we'd like to get, roughly speaking, a global picture, which would be like a refinement of the K-theory classification of all possible D-brains that can be obtained, up to certain identifications, of course. So that's where the category theory comes in. Right. So the fact that categories are relevant for this was first noticed by Douglas in N=2 models. And then Lazaroyev provided a systematic approach in string field theory, which I'm going to, some aspects will be discussed here. So, well, just as I promised, this short introduction to categories. I'll try to make it. So the category is some mathematical structure, which is basic, which can be used to study almost anything, because it's very general. Yeah, it's general. It doesn't concentrate on specific properties of an object, but studies large collections of objects, which can be anything, manifolds, D-brains, whatever objects you might choose to study. And the only thing that you require, I mean, the structure, the actual structure that's given is that for any pair of such objects, one has to specify some maps. But they are maps in some generalized sense, as we'll see in a minute. For example, these A and B are manifolds. These maps are just smooth maps of manifolds. But if A and B are more general objects, F, the so-called maps in a category, can be something else. And the axioms that these maps are supposed to satisfy are, again, very general. And they actually are suggestive of some relation with string field theory. Because the only axiom that they are required to satisfy is, first of all, associativity, which is represented by that diagram over there. And second of all, that there should be a unit element mapping A to itself such that these obvious diagrams commute. So this is not. So that's just the structure. So it's a very general structure, which turns out to be relevant for string theory. OK, so now let's look, as I promised you, why this such a general structure is relevant for D-brains. So as I said, those objects, the objects in the category can be anything, so why not take them to be deep brains? Because that's what we're interested in. And then this was done by Douglas in the twisted N equals 2 models. And so if I take the objects to be deep brains, the maps in the category now will be just boundary operators. They could be either boundary changing operators, boundary condition changing operators, or just boundary operators in the open string algebra of a single deep brain. And in this context, it's known that these operators have an associative product, which is essentially the open string Kygal ring. And of course, we have units. So these things form a category. In a conformal filter. Now, Lazaroy pointed out that, in fact, we should do this construction in string field theory, and so we should take this open string states to be off shell. And this is a generalization of earlier work of Gabardiel and Zeebach. And in some sense, what's happening here is that the category structure that you get this way can be thought of as some generalization of a notion of algebra. You see, if you just restrict yourself to a single deep ring here, the boundary operators will form some algebra. But the category structure is somehow more global because it keeps track of the boundary changing operators and it keeps track of the objects that they connect or they intertwine between. And of course, if you want to get a category structure into go off shell, you can do it in special cases when the open string theory is associative off shell. But that will be the case in the topological models. Okay, so as I said before, I will concentrate on topological models, more specifically on the topological B model. And this is the presentation here follows, first of all, work of Mike Douglas, and then some work of Aspinall and Lawrence, Kumul Vafa, Lazaroy, and myself. So let's start. In order to fix ideas, let me remind you what the B model is, according to Witten. So if we start with an arbitrary N equals 2 superconformal field theory, we have, of course, left and right moving currents, which we have the energy momentum tensor, the supercurrent, and the bosonic U1 current, which is actually, it's very convenient, we should represent it in bosonized form. And what we do here is that we get a simpler theory by the so-called topological twist. In some sense, we define a topological energy momentum tensor by modifying the physical momentum tensor this way. And there are two possible twists we can perform. It's either the B twist or the A twist, and they differ by a relative sign. Now, what we can get by such a twist is a topological theory, namely a theory with a zero central charge. But we have a fermionic symmetry, which behaves as a BRS symmetry generated by a mode of a supercurrent. So I'm actually giving you all these details, which are well known, just because they are relevant in order to describe a crucial idea of Douglas. Related to deep brains in this model. So the U1 current J will become a Gauss number operator, so U1 charge becomes a Gauss number. And if we choose to study these theories on surfaces with a boundary, like a cylinder or the disk, it's clear that we can impose two types of boundary conditions, which are B and A boundary conditions, relating the supercurrents and the U1 bosonic current this way. And they are, of course, compatible with the respective twists. Well, what's important to keep in mind here is that the B boundary condition is equivalent to a Neumann boundary condition of the compact boson, which bosonizes the U1 current. And the Dirichlet boundary condition is the A boundary condition is the Dirichlet boundary condition on the same compact boson. So this simple observation, which was well known, was used by Douglas to define the so-called grading of deep brains. So it's a simple observation, but it's very important for what I'm going to have to say next. So it's easier to understand it in the A model, although I will mainly concentrate on the B model in this talk. But just to understand it, let's look at the A model. So in the A model, we have a Dirichlet boundary condition on this compact boson. And if you look at a D brain, if you look at the open string stretching from a D brain to itself, you see that the open string states will be graded by a quantum number, which is essentially winding number about the circle. So in order to keep track of this grading of the open string states, Douglas proposed to work on the covering space, which is actually an idea promoted by Watty Taylor a couple of years ago. But this time we apply it in an abstract setup. So this is not a physical circle, really. In our theory, it's just this U1 circle. And so the idea is mainly to keep track of the grading by working on the covering space. So that means that each D brain is, in fact, should be graded. So we work with graded D brains, which are a D brain with an integer, which keeps track of its position. Of course, the assignment of grading is not absolute. I mean, you can shift all the gradings by the same amount, and nothing would happen. But suppose we fix such an assignment. Okay, so then the interpretation is very easy. The open string stretching between, for example, d-1 and d1 would carry ghost number 2, and so on.
That's the same as the U1 chart of the open string sector.
Yes, the same as, precisely. Yeah, it should be said that, there's no doubt that many of you realize that, in fact, these images should be related by spectral flow, but I'm going to choose to work on the covering space as opposed to impose this identification at the offset. So this happened in the A model. Now, what's going to happen in the B model? Well, the B model is actually mirrored to the A model, and mirror symmetry is effectively fit duality on the circle. So what we'd like to claim that the B brains would also be graded by an integer, which this time can be interpreted as some sort of a causal, it's a causal Kleinmann quantum number by usual fit duality rules. So now let's see how all this applies to the topological sigma model defined by Witten. So for this, we studied a sigma model with target space of Calabi-Yau of threefold, and the worksheet fermions are twisted. Namely, we'll have scalars in the one form on the worksheet. And the Lagrangian is the familiar one, of course, taking the twisting into account. And we have a fermionic symmetry, which is generated by Q, by the BRS charge. Okay, so of course, in this case, this model can be coupled, as Witten showed, to gauge fields on the target space. And if we impose appropriate boundary conditions, which are effectively Neumann boundary conditions, so these would be D brains filling the target space X. And the coupling is realized by the typical Wilson line coupling, and then we have a supersymmetric partner of that, a term like that, which is also familiar in the recent work. And the fermionic symmetry is preserved if the 0-2 part of the curvature is 0, which says that the 0-1, A0-1 defines effectively an integrable holomorphic structure on E, on the bundle E. So it's not surprising. We knew all this. I mean, the fermionic symmetry is preserved if we have holomorphicity on the target space. And what I want to describe next, to review, is the open string field theory constructed on these models, this was one done by Witten in a beautiful paper, 93, I think, and which is actually the base which is a very plays a very important role in this talk. So as has been discussed before, this is I'm going to have to fix a holomorphic bundle E as a background, and I will construct the open string field theory as fluctuations of fluctuations around this background. And the crucial observation of Witten was that the string field, the functional, which we still thought of as a functional, localizes. So if the world sheet coupling goes to infinity, this string field localizes on constant maps from the interval to the target space. So this is a very special property of topological field theory, and this is what makes them easy to understand. As we saw before in the previous talks, the string fields are very complicated objects in general, but here they become very easy because of this localization procedure. It's as a function of sigma, yeah. Yes, right. Okay. So with this being said, there is a lowest mode expansion for psi in terms of fermionic zero mode, and the coefficient of this coefficients of this expansion can be used to define forms. It's a standard procedure. Can be thought of as forms, zero Q forms on the target space, which take values in the endomorphisms of E, which locally means just the adjoint representation, as you might expect, fluctuations of a D-plane. And the BRS charges in this background is simply the Darboux operator acting on the section of V, sections of V, and that's it. So the string field theory is very simple, it's geometrical, and moreover, the string field theory action also takes a very simple form. Namely, if we look at Gauss number one fields, we can localize as you can localize the star product and the trace as well, and the star product localizes to the exterior product of forms, whereas the trace localizes to this simple expression, which is an integral on x. You see, you don't have a complicated functional integral; you just have an integral on x, and then it's integral with respect to the holomorphic tree form of x. So then the action takes this form, which is the holomorphic Chern-Simons action. So that makes life easier. Well, of course, the equation of motion associated with this Chern-Simons action, as you all know, it's easy. It just says that the solutions to the equations of motion define new holomorphic structures on E. So in some sense, this gives you deformations of the old background, the old D-plane, defining new boundary topological field theory by deformation. And we have a gauge equivalence, of course, which is well known. So now, what's the novelty? The novelty is that I'd like to describe an extension of Witten's open string field theory. That is essentially taking into account the grading that Mike Douglas defined on D-brains. So instead of taking a background consisting of a single vector bundle, I'd like to take a background consisting of a collection of graded vector bundles in which I keep track of n. And the crucial ingredient is that n is related to the boundary Gauss number. In some sense, the idea is very simple. I guess it's not. So if we take a collection like that, then the string field expansion would be accordingly, the coefficients in the string field expansion would be accordingly maps from any bundle to any bundle, effectively. And they define forms on the target space, which are twisted by maps, forms with values in maps from any two bundles. And as I said before, the crucial ingredient to this construction is that each such form carries a bulk Gauss number Q, which is the form degree and then it carries a boundary ghost number, which is just the difference between the gradings of the two bundles. So I think that's a starting point. Now, it's an interesting thing because you see, this is a mixing between the bulk ghost number and the boundary ghost number, so that the ghost number one piece of the string field would be now a combination of forms of various degrees, and these various degrees are supposed to be are correlated with the boundary ghost number. So to give you a more pictorial representation, we have configurations like this in which you see we have the forms of degree one, which go from a bundle to itself, and these were the fluctuations that we knew already. And then we have forms of degree zero, which are just maps from consecutive bundles. And then we have forms of degree two, which go back one step, and forms of degree three, which go back two steps. So this is the ghost number one piece. So one can, since before we knew that we could interpret, the geometry, at the end of the day, we could interpret this the ghost number one piece of the string field as a connection. Now we might wonder what is the structure from a mathematical point of view. And the thing I want to propose here is that the components of psi 1 this time would define a super connection on a super vector bundle in the sense of Quillen, and also is studied by Bismuth and Lott, because there is some extra structure given by the Z gradient. So in other words, what we do is sort of we roll up all this complex, we define, we add all the even bundles, all the bundles with even grading, and all the bundles with odd grading. And I want to show you that psi would become a super connection on this super vector bundle. And this is not the first time that objects like that appear in deep brain physics. They appeared in Witten's K-theory paper, and then in the work of Krauss, Larsen, and Takenaji, Terashima, and Suji on boundary string field theory. I want to stress that this is just the ghost number one part. So as I said before, for a single deep brain, we had 0-1 forms, which can, and if we deform the bar operator by 0-1 forms, they define a derivation of the algebra of forms of all degrees. Well, in this case, what happens is that since we have a super bundle like this, E plus and E minus, the bundle maps themselves would be graded, so we'll have even bundle maps, which are block diagonal, if you want, and odd bundle maps, which are off diagonal. And the upshot is that becomes a derivation on a super algebra this time. And the action, the string field action, would take a very similar form. It would be an integral over super trace. And the multiplication here is a multiplication in a super algebra, which was actually defined by Quillen a long time ago. So I have to stress here that a different action, an extended action, has been written by Waffa for this model, which is in essence similar, but in that case we keep all the components in the string field, so you obtain an extended action which is based on a supergroup. In fact, if you define if you sum the even grades and the end grades, this psi can be thought of as a string field with a value in a supergroup. But you can show that if you just truncate to the ghost number one piece here, you get the other one, so they are consistent. Okay, so what's the end of the story? So the story is that after constructing this action, taking the grading into account, one has to solve the equations of motion. And here we start getting interesting things, because so the equations of motion are rather complicated, as you see. And they involve forms of various degrees. But we can study them systematically by setting some of the degrees to zero and see what kind of objects we get. So in this particular case, for example, we have the first equation of motion, we just say that the zero forms form a complex, namely they compose to zero. So in fact, these bundles, this graded one, the deformation of a gradient collection of D-brains would give you a complex. What is a bit surprising about this result is that in general, it seems that if we turn on all these off-diagonal deformations, the deformed Darboux operators, so the deformed Darboux operator, which would look like something like B bar plus A1 and N, for example, will no longer define an integrable holomorphic structure, because you see this equation here receives corrections from the other terms. So overall, we do not have a holomorphic structure on the individual bundles. So this suggests that, in fact, we have more general objects, which perhaps can be called holomorphic superconnections, but individually they are not holomorphic. Although such an object preserves the fermionic symmetry. So I should say that this phenomenon doesn't arise if we restrict the configuration with A2 and A3 equals zero. So in that case, the deformation is a holomorphic complex of holomorphic bundles. Namely, the maps here are holomorphic. And this is the main, these are the objects that I will, in fact, concentrate on, because I don't have a good understanding of the others. So these are the objects studied in detail by Douglas and Aspinall and Lawrence. So now you can, what happens is that you can construct a so-called D-brain category, as discussed by all these people. And the rough idea is that if you start with two complicated object deformations like that, you can define maps by simply summing over all open string states, stretching between all these terms in the complex, and then taking a cohomology with respect to a BRS operator. And the BRS operator that acts on the open string states would have schematically this form, receives a contribution from both boundary open string fields. So anyway, so I don't want to insist on that, because if you start writing all the indices in the right places, you're going to get a complicated structure. And I'd rather concentrate on the few facts that we do understand and try to explain about the physics of that. So if I just, for example, ignore the deformations in which these things are non-zero, because as I said, I don't have a good understanding, I will get a restricted class of deformations which are just complexes, and these are the things that Mark Douglas and Aspinall Lawrence discussed. And in fact, it should be said that this particular class of deformations agrees with an earlier proposal of Koncevich in the context of homological mirror symmetry. So now, what I want to, the remaining part, is let's see what does it mean. I mean, because I described so far a formal structure, and it's hard to understand what does it mean. What is the physical consequence of that? So is there any physics in the derived category, for example? So to give you a simple example, what it means in the topological setup is that imagine a resolved conifold geometry which has a holomorphic two-sphere embedded in a non-compact club BL with normal bundle minus 1 plus 0 minus 1. And here I want to take a configuration of brains in which one of the bundles, D0, consists of a D2 brain with multiplicity 2 on S2 with no flux. And the second is a D brain with one unit of flux on S2. And so this is in mathematical terms, these are denoted by two copies of the trivial bundle and one copy of a bundle with a flux. The flux of the gauge field, but yeah, I mean, if you want, you can think like that. Yeah. I just meant, you know, the magnetic flux. So it turns out that there is a holomorphic map in between these objects, and one can construct a deformation of this sort. It's a particular deformation. It's an object in the so-called derived category, the way I described before. And if one looks at the zeros of this holomorphic map, you realize I won't give you the details, but what you realize is that what you get from the zeros by looking at the zeros of the holomorphic map is in fact a D2 brain with a -1 unit of flux. So in the derived category, these two are different objects. Which the first one is a two-term complex with a holomorphic map. The second one is a one-term complex. And the crucial statement, the main statement that I can think of in the derived category, is that these objects cannot be distinguished from each other. So you see, as complexes, they certainly are different because this is a two-term complex, this is a one-term complex. But in fact, what happens is that one has a natural map like this. And what happens in the derived category is that this map somehow gets a formal inverse. So in some sense, what the physics way of saying it is that in the derived category, all the objects that should be physically identified are identified. It's just a formalism that identifies the objects that you'd expect to be identified. Well, that's, I guess, the best account I can give about this object, this strange object, because I could start, of course, giving you more structure, but I don't think it's going to be more illuminating than this. What this means is that these objects are not distinguished in any formation process. You can add this object to any given D-brain, or you can condense this object to any given D-brain. You get isomorphic things. So you can simply exchange one for another, which is not so surprising. It's just a formalization of the fact of something that we knew all along. I mean, as physicists, but I should say that I should stress that this type of that this holds only in the topological field theory. And to tell you what happens in a physical theory, more interesting things happen. And for this, I would like to discuss instead a slightly different geometry, which is the resolution of this singularity, Ogdefold singularity, which is this CP2, which is a four manifold in a non-compact Calabi-Yau manifold with a -3 bundle, a normal bundle. And all you need to know about this manifold CP2 is that it's complex and it has a holomorphic sphere inside. Now, I would like to look at a different system, which is a D4 brain with -1 unit of flux. So it's a D4 brain wrapping with four manifold with -1 unit of flux on S2. And then another object, which is just a D4 brain with no flux. And in this case, it turns out that, again, I can condense a boundary-changing operator phi, which is a holomorphic map. And in the derived category, what you get by condensing such an operator is that you get effectively this object consisting of a stack of D4 and another D4 with a holomorphic map is strictly equivalent to a D2 brain wrapped on the holomorphic 2 sphere. So that's the statement in the topological field theory, namely that there is no experiment, if you want, that I can do within the limits of the topological field theory that I can distinguish between these two objects. But now let's go to the untwisted theory, the physical theory. And this is all discussed by Douglas. I think it's a very nice picture to what happens when we start asking questions in the unphysical theory. In this case, the moduli, the Keller moduli, enter the picture. And the phi, the field phi that I as we had in the topological model, corresponds to a Ramon ground state. And the Ramon ground state has a supersymmetric partner by spectral flow. And the nice picture is that the way such an object couples to the Kähler moduli, so what the Kähler coupling does effectively, if you remember the phi circle, the compact circle of the U1 boson, what this coupling phi does is that it gives a real value grading to the deep brains. So this is nothing else but the phase. If you think of these deep brains in the A model, this is nothing else but the phase, the integral of the holomorphic freeform on a free cycle, on a special Lagrangian free cycle. So these phis here are related to this phase. So this is effectively the mode. I mean, if we were in a topological theory, we did not have such real valued gradings, which here occur. And what happens is that the mass of the bosonic state, which corresponds to this phi, is given effectively by the difference of these two gradings. So whereas these two objects were completely indistinguishable in the topological setup, in the physical theory, this is no longer true. Because, for example, I want to see, we can look at what happens along the moduli space. Imagine we can move from large volume to small volume in the moduli space, because that was the resolution of a singularity. And what happens is that if you do, it's a simple computation, really. If you do the computations, you realize that the mass of the bosonic field that we looked at, it's negative for large volume. So the physical interpretation is that for large volume, that's a tachyon, it condenses and it gives you a stable D2 brain. However, as I move in the moduli space, at some point the mass is zero, and the mass being zero is interpreted as marginal stability in the bound state. And if we move past this value of the radius, then we see that the mass becomes positive, and this has been interpreted by Mike Douglas as a D2 brain decay in a D4 brain in a state that carries this charge, a D4 brain charge, and this thing should be bar, which is an anti-D brain. Okay, so this is just, I think, in my opinion, a nice description of a microscopic description of brain decay. So I think the thing to keep in mind is that although all those brains, we got all those brains in the topological model and they look the same, in fact, physical theory is much more complicated. And two such objects might not even exist at the same time in the same region of the moduli space. Okay, so, I'm not sure I managed to convince you of the usefulness of this point of view on deep brains, but I'll give you a brief outlook. So I guess what we see here is that we get these deep brain categories are just a global picture of deep brain formation. And they are understood for topological string theories to some extent. And Mike Douglas has made important steps towards understanding physical deep brains in 2.2 models, as I explained briefly before. And the more work that has to be done, I guess we have to elaborate, I mean, to extend, or maybe to better understand all these points, the coupling to the Kähler moduli. So the coupling to the Kähler moduli, effectively, if you want to really solve the full problem, you should perhaps study it in the open string field theory, in the super string field theory, which is very complicated. But perhaps we can find some methods of actually dealing with this without going there. And then there is the question of computing superpotential. And finally, an interesting question, in my opinion, if there are any real physical effects of this new deep brain that we seem to get, like that they are complexes or maybe even more general objects. I'm just trying to understand if they are, for example, relevant for the geometric transitions that have been described by Mina and Kungrun or something like that. I mean, if we can really measure something non-trivial physically. And in the broader picture, it's, of course, one would like to know if there are serious implications for n equals 1 string vector in 4 dimensions. And I'll stop here.
Questions?
aspects such as the deep brain decay and so forth, which arise actually in the N equal to 2 realizations in string theory, like the decays I'm trying to get started with in geometry, and their decay has been studied by conventional methods, and those results are derived. What aspect of derived category sheds new light on it? And in particular, what is the integer grading of the derived category, which is crucial for derived category, have relevance in superstrings?
Well, the derived category, well, perhaps, well, the derived category in principle could give you, although I don't know if this is worth talking in detail, to give you the a way of studying, all possible. I mean, I'm not sure all possible decays or something. But the grading, I mean, perhaps I should have said the point is that the grading, the way I introduce the grading here, is that if you move half, so a shift of the, so I have this S1 phi circle, so a shift by half a period would represent going from a brain to an anti-brain. It's anti-brain.
Well, that's Z2, I understand.
Yes, that's a Z2 grade.
What is the meaning of Z?
Ah, you're asking about the Z grading.
Yes.
The Z grading, as I said before, I don't think this is a completely understood question, because as I said before, you have a spectral flow that should grade these images with some periodicity, but not with Z2 periodicity. In fact, in the physical theory, it's a mod six periodicity. And but unfortunately, I don't know if this question hasn't been studied in any systematic way. Perhaps we should, So the physics of the derived category is still something that is still something that we have to understand if there is any.
Just a comment about Kummer's question. Aspinwall and Lawrence actually construct states which cannot be realized as a D-brain plus a grading. It's a complicated object that doesn't decay into a simple D-brain. So you need the formalism of the derived category to see these objects.
What are they?
I mean, these are deformations of D-brain states that you write down in a more conventional way.
If you look at the attractor equations for constructing D-brains in Calabi-Yau, if you just give a charge, that doesn't determine a unique attractor point. I'm just wondering vaguely if something like a more data, like what you're talking about, this integer data, might determine the actual basin of attractor.
Well, so in that situation, this grading is in fact a grading on special Lagrangian manifolds. Yeah. But I just. I don't think I can say anything intelligent about this yet. Yeah, well, it should be studied, but I can't.
So is this formalism limited to taking G string to zero before doing anything else, or does it apply beyond that limit?
Well, it is a weakly coupled formalism, I guess. I mean, even in topological theory, if you take into account loop corrections of the holomorphic transimons, you get something much more complicated. Let aside, I mean, if you.
You mentioned these higher-order non-holomorphic deformations. Is there any physical relevance of those?
Yeah, so they appear to be there, but I won't venture to give any clear statement about this, because if you do it naively, you see that they don't make too much sense in the physical theory. Or I don't know how to make sense of them. But there are some subtle questions. So there are subtle questions related to how deep brains are identified. So I suggested some identification to the right category, but if you include those objects, you get a bigger category. But on the same side, on the other hand, you might have more complicated identifications. So I'm not sure if these are really new objects, or just maybe they are sort of, we got them there because we looked at a more general thing, but we can make them equivalent to something else. So that could be the case. Categories do pretty funny things sometimes. That's why I don't want to do it.
Any further questions? If not, let's thank our speaker again.